This is Cool Fan Radio.
Welcome back to the Port Game Day podcast, coming to you on the Port Fan Radio Network. I'm your host, John, and I'm still stuck on 47 games in the Div 6 reserves. Joining us, as usual, the man who gets no introduction, it's Friendly Andrew.
G'day, everyone.
And also with us is a shadowy figure from the Adelaide hip-hop scene and former winner of KFC's Kicking for Chicken. G'day, Jimmy.
G'day, boys. How good's it? The footy's back. The footy is back. Yes,
it kicks off for real tomorrow night, doesn't it? I mean, is there anything happening tonight of importance? Don't think so. It's been a long.
You're not talking about the female grand final, are you?
I don't know. I saw there a couple of there was a B grade kind of preseason trial game on tonight, wasn't there? Just a few clubs.
Who knows? We got more important things to do.
That we do. It's been a long off season, but it's good to have footy back. And we're back for another year. It's our third season of doing the podcast. We're back giving the people what they want, giving the people what they need, and we're here to preview the round one clash against one of our bogey sides, the Sydney Swans at the SCG. It's Saturday twilight footy to kick off the season. The Swans are once again predicted to finish around the top of the table, but they're down on a few numbers coming into round one. I mean, let's talk about selection to start off with. Port's selection probably went somewhat as expected based on news that came through during the week. So debutants include Sam Powerpepper, Brett Eddy, and Dan Houston, whereas Sydney are debuting Oliver Florent, who's a kind of a midfielder. They picked up pick 13 in the draft this season. It was one of the players who was actually originally talked about being a possibility at one of our picks. So I guess, guys, aside from the excitement of the new season, it brings the first game at the club for a few players. So, I mean, let's run down in particular a few of those guys. So we're talking the ins. We've got, as I mentioned before, we've got Sam Powerpepper, Brett Eddy, and Dan Houston have all been named in the side. So, I mean, we might start with the headline news, and that's Sam Powerpepper. We were all down at South Adelaide, the Noarlunga, to see us play Hawthorn the other week, and Sam Powerpepper definitely threw his weight around. So how are we feeling about this inclusion and what he brings to the table this week?
He's looking like the steal of the draft at this point. JLT had his three games to show what he can do, and it was just awesome for us to have three games to let a kid like that have a run around before facing some high pressure situations in the real stuff. So I was really impressed what he did in the Richmond game, that first quarter, that first goal he was involved in. You know, I jumped out of my seat and I'm like, here we go, a bit of excitement back. And having a player like that with Ollie Wines and those two in particular, if we can get a sort of output in which we got with Ollie Wines in his first year, I think we'll be very happy. You know, when we saw Ollie come in, he was brought in for a purpose, and Ken really nurtured him and gave him a real goal and a role in the midfield. And I feel like that's what we're going to get with Sam Powerpepper this year. And if he can produce what we saw with Ollie, I think we'll have an absolute gem on our hands in Sam Powerpepper. So yeah, seeing him in the flesh at Noarlunga, really impressed with some of the stuff he was able to bring to the table.
Yeah, he's sort of your textbook first year, first game player with the seriously big build, some really aggressive hunting of the ball. So yeah, it's I don't know whether you'd call it a surprise that he's playing. I mean, if you picked out of the the list of the guys that we took at the draft, he'd probably be pretty much the favourite to have played in round one, and he's done everything he's asked of him in the preseason to take that chance.
Yeah, well, he's really an immediate cult figure, isn't he? He kind of cemented that status, if not before this, when he mowed down Sean Burgoyne with that don't argue against the Hawks. I mean, obviously the comparison has been made to Dustin Martin, and his physicality is almost at that level already. Seeing him run around in person against the Hawks, it was incredible. He seems bigger than your average AFL player already. I think he might shed a few free kicks over the year, but he's definitely an impact player that we need. And James, you made the comparison to Ollie Wines and him coming to the side. That's really what we're all seeing, I think. And he's a partner in crime for Ollie. And I'll talk about this a bit later in the podcast, but there's a possible theme emerging here where we're seeing a few parallels, in fact, with that 2013 year. So, really excited for Sam Powell-Pepper's inclusion. Might not really fill the stat sheet, but I think what he does will be felt physically by the opponents.
It just gives us that luxury of being able to have a big body in there at all times, whether it be him and Ollie playing side by side or Ollie resting and Peps in the guts. There's always a big body with that presence around the ball, and I think that's what we missed last year. This time last year we were talking about possible midfielders stepping up to that role, and they never really came through, and now it feels like we got that depth in that contested midfield role, and if either one of them are rotating through, we're going to have that presence around the ball majority of the game, which is really exciting, something to look forward to.
And our next debutante, who's actually been named surprisingly, but what does the team sheet really mean these days, is Brett Eddy. He's been named the last player on the interchange. Another player who impressed in that trial game against Hawthorn, a really handy addition. And it's kind of player who, at his age, I think he's 27 years old, could really fill a role for 5 years as a forward who hopefully could kick, maybe between 35 and 50 goals a year. And that would, put him on almost like a James Podsiadly-like career arc. What I saw from him against the Hawks was pretty impressive. He seemed like a really smart player. He's obviously done his apprenticeship throughout a few state league competitions and just really knew the good spots to lead to. And you can almost see the difference between him and, say, Charlie in that, Charlie was a player who was kind of thrown in the deep end as a Queenslander, a guy coming from a non-traditional footy state. Whereas Brett Eddy's really honed his craft and really, as I said before, he's kind of bit his time and has really earned his spot at AFL level. And you could just see him getting comfortable at the level during that game against the Hawks, which he registered 5 goals for.
He looks like a natural forward and a natural footballer as well. And I think those types of players can take to next levels quite easily because they understand the game. They understand how to make space, how to use space, and that's really what he's done quite well. And his game against Hawthorn, I think, probably got him the gig in the end. And from memory, he wasn't even supposed to play against Hawthorn. He only came in late because Robbie Gray dropped out. So he's done what he's needed to do in the preseason, and he should present a pretty good foil in our forward lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And what really excites me about his inclusion is it straightens up the team. It gives us the option of playing Charlie higher up the ground, which can release, the attacking defenders to give them an option up the middle of the ground. And with his ability to turn on a dime, his quick pace and his smarts, he can really add an X factor into that forward line, which we were really missing last year. Someone like Charlie Dixon really needs a second coil for him to be effective. And with someone like Eddie coming in, it gives us that presence, which we were sort of looking for with Schultz and Dixon last year, which we were unfortunately, we weren't able to see. So with him in the team, it's like I said, straightens us up, gives us a reliable goal kicker, someone that can take a third defender and really try and get off the leash. And his ability to hit the contest and stay on his feet was saying I really noticed at Noarlunga, and those snaps, you know, those goals where he kicked off one step were really a highlight of that week, a weekend. So if he can bring, you know, a 2-3 goal performance week in, week out, we'll be absolutely rubbing our hands together with that in.
Yeah, definitely. And he's definitely got a nose for goal, and he loves to kick the goals. Like, I don't think I've really seen him turn down a shot kind of from outside 55, really. And, as you said, he's a smart player. Like, there was that particular play where I think we were looking to bring the ball inside 50 and Dixon led up, and the ball actually carried over that contest, and Eddie was just in the hole to take the grab and slotted it from probably 20 metres out straight in front. So there was a number of plays kind of like that where it just seemed he knows how to read the situation. He kind of knows where the ball might get to and he can finish. So, yeah, pretty chuffed about that. He's given that he's a 27-year-old coming into the competition who's probably a bit surer of himself and his ability. He can come in and probably be comfortable and perform from the get-go, whereas a younger player might come in and be a bit more, feel under the pump. All right, so the other debutant who's coming in and has been named, I think on the half-back line, is Dan Houston, who, I mean, if you said last year that Dan Houston would be starting at half-back for Port in round one, even a year out from him being drafted as a rookie, you know, you'd probably think you're a bit crazy because he came in basically as a medium lead up forward and didn't really seem, at least at face value, to have many more strings to his bow. During last year with the Magpies, he spent a bit of time in defence and up the field. So he's obviously worked on that. And I'm pretty impressed by what he brings to the table. He's a good size. He stands about 190 centimetres, and his superb kicking skills obviously complement something we're looking for in the back line. So a bit of a success story here for Dan Houston.
Unbelievable rise to play in the team. I mean, he really came in as a bit of a one-trick pony from how he was described in the draft a year ago, and to develop and to be given a chance playing somewhere else and have a different look and then to come through is fantastic. And so it'll be interesting to see how he goes to try and carry on some of that pretty neat and tidy form he had playing through the preseason.
I'm liking what he brings to the table. That ability to rebound and hit targets off the half-back line was something we sorely missed last year. If he can bring that to the table, he can cement his spot in the team. I like the mix of Darcy Byrne-Jones, Hammer Hartlett, Dan Houston and Matthew Broadbent. If they can all sort of rotate through that attacking back row, I think we've got a good little mix there. So it's up to him to keep his spot now, and the pressure's going to lift, the intensity's going to lift. So if he can prove himself in a game like round one v Sydney in Sydney, we'll be very happy. Just like hoping he can keep his spot and really add to, like I said, that mix on the halfback line.
I guess, I mean, one of the things I'd prepared to talk about tonight in advance of selection was actually about Joe Attlee. Now, he didn't end up getting picked, and it was actually mooted during the week that he'd probably get a game. So I don't know about you guys, but it seemed to me like Carl Amon was probably the guy who might have got a game ahead of him. So obviously we don't have ins and outs today, but I mean, how do you see that decision? I mean, Joe Attlee is probably a player that we might see a bit from during this year. So what do we think about that, or do you reject my idea that it was an Attlee v Amon decision?
Yeah, I think it was a Sam Papelpa versus Attlee decision. Play a similar role, two young blokes, in and under, contested style of players. I think Amon earned his spot in his own right, and I think with what we saw Papelpa bring to the table, he had the nod over Attlee. But look, Attlee's a jet. He's another gun, another gem that we've found in the draft late in the early second round. So I think we've got a really good footballer on our hands, and I feel like our recruiting department's done a fantastic job yet again addressing a need in our team. And look, if we can base our midfield around an Attlee, Sam Papelpa, Ollie Wines, then add those outside type of players. I think we've got a nucleus going forward for when the likes of Boak and Gray and that type of player retires.
It'll be interesting. I guess it was a name on for Attlee poll. What will be interesting is Attlee's traveling is a traveling emergency. He didn't play in tonight's game against Sturt, so he is the traveling emergency. So if anything goes wrong, or potentially they take a view around the conditions, because it is supposed to be is wet and will continue to be wet in Sydney. Maybe he comes in late. I mean, I know they don't like to do that with rookies. They want to give the families as much time and notice for their debuts as possible. But he is 23rd, basically. So I think I agree with everything he said. He was super impressive against Hawthorn. Didn't have a huge amount of game time, but still racked up 15 touches. Put some players on their behinds with some pretty tough play. I think he's going to be a bit of a fan favourite as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's been good that certainly in the and we obviously on the Port Fan Radio Network, we had a fair bit of coverage of the draft. And it's been a while actually since we've picked up kind of like a genuine high production midfielder. I did a bit of thinking about it earlier today, and I think you go back to Wines as far as the most recent one before this that's worked out in terms of who we've drafted. And then you even go back all the way back to Travis Boak and Robbie Gray. So between Powell Pepper, Willem Drury and Joe Attlee, I think we've really set up a succession plan for our midfield. But as I said before, I think that, I mean, I interpreted it as maybe an Attlee versus Amon decision, and maybe the mix they're looking for, maybe they want that outside player in Amon, and obviously he's had a pretty good preseason, and you know, he's entering his fourth year, so he's obviously going to be a candidate for a few games this year as well. So looking at the Sydney team, guys, how do we think they're shaping up? We mentioned before that they're one of our bogey sides. I think if you stack up the results since our AFL inception, we have our second worst win-loss record against the Swans, with North Melbourne being number one. So I think we talked about when we caught up at Norlunga, guys, that we haven't had a win against the Swans since, I think it was at 2013 at Amy Stadium. The Swans are always up and about, and they're a very strong lineup. They've made two of the last three grand finals in the Tippett Franklin era, if you like, but have yet to win the big one. A bit of turnover during the off season. They shed a few kind of fringe players, both to retirement or delisting, with Ted Richards and Ben McGlynn, I think, being delisted or retiring. And Toby Nankivis made his way to Richmond, and there's another one who's not springing to mind right now. But a few guys are injured. I think McVeigh, Papley, Rowan and Heaney haven't made the selected side. But, I mean, what do we think about Sydney at this point in time? And I suppose, what do we see them generally as an outfit, and what we might expect out of them this year?
Yeah, look, I mean, they're back-to-back grand finalists. You can't take anything away from Sydney, and they're an impressive outfit week in, week out, and they just get the job done, especially on their home ground, and their record speaks for itself. So we're not kidding anyone when we say we're up against it this week, but I feel like this is the week, if you want to play Sydney, it's the best time, and I feel like if we're up for the contest and, you know, being round one, being like a finals atmosphere, this is the week we can get them. I don't feel 100% confident we're going to win, but I feel like this is the best time for us to get up against Sydney. And look, our record is extremely poor, and it's been spoken about how Sydney are our bogey team, but I feel like with all the pressure the club has put on the coach and the team to make finals, and all the talk in the pre-season, it just feels like we've given ourselves a puncher's chance this weekend. And look, no one's picked us, and fair enough, like, I'm not going to pick us, but I just feel like it's a good week to take Sydney, and I'll give us more of a chance in round one than, say, round 15. You know, like, I feel like this is the week we could beat them. But, you know, we're definitely going to be up against it, no doubt.
their strength is still their midfield. It's still a seriously strong group, and that's where it sort of obviously starts for them. They've lost, and they don't have that little bit of depth in the team this week, but that doesn't seem to impact them. They still have this production line of no name, 185 to 188 centimetre blokes that just come in and straight line the ball and do what they need to do to get the job done. They're just an incredibly consistent club, and we'll have to play a phenomenal game to knock them off, as we did in 2013. I mean, that was almost one of the performances of one of the greatest performances under Hinkley to knock the Swans off. And it might be in similar type of conditions, because I remember that being quite a cold, wet day at Amy Stadium. So maybe those conditions can do us some favours. I mean, one thing that's interesting is Aaron Young was in front of the media today, and I was actually impressed and surprised about how positive he was talking about the opportunity to go and play Sydney, and the fact that they're not interested about records or how tough it's going to be. They're ready to get over there and give it a crack. And it's a really interesting way of it was a stark change to some of the way that I guess we've spoken about the opposition a lot in the past. It was very much focused on what we're going to do and taking a positive mindset over. So I've been feeling increasingly more positive as we come towards the game, but I think the midfield battle is where it's going to be won and lost for us.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you mentioned before, Andrew, I had it in my notes as well, but skipped over it. That I mean, they lost that depth. I mean, the other one that I was trying to think of is Tom Mitchell, who I think was like 17th in possessions in the competition last year. So he's made his way to Hawthorn, and they haven't quite replaced him on paper, you might say. But as you say, like Sydney, just they're the masters of replacing like players kind of year on year. So I'm sure there'll be someone next in line. As I said before, they bring in Oliver Florent. They've got a few other guys on the kind of on the cusp, it seems.
You want to talk about the midfield, though? I mean, do you feel like we have an advantage in first ruck with Paddy Ryder and his pre-season, what he's been able to bring, and the lack of depth in the Sydney ruck department?
It definitely seems that way from a on-paper name perspective, but one thing Sydney have done continually is they've very rarely had I guess you'd say like a top eight ruckman. They've always rucked to a bit of a workhorse, and so I don't know whether it's one of those teams that you go, oh, we're going to have a ruck advantage, and that's gonna set us. It'd be the difference, mate. Because I think they're just used to. I mean, you got Kennedy, Parker, Hanbury. Those guys, I don't think they particularly care whether they get the ball clean. They'll just go to work and hold it in and just make it as a tougher contest as possible. So I agree that on paper it looks that way, but I don't think it makes a difference to Sydney.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I wouldn't say we're going in with a heavy advantage. The Sydney ruck division's pretty handy, if you ask me. I mean, you've got Sam Naismith, who is a 205-centimetre guy who came into the side last year for Sydney. And, I mean, he assumed the number one ruck role and was the reason that kind of like Callum Sinclair, who was brought over from West Coast, kind of fell out of calculations, and Toby Nankivis took off to Richmond. So you've got him as your number one ruck, and then Kurt Tippett's. Kurt Tippett's a very similar player, really, to Paddy Ryder. So they've got a couple of looks, to be honest, and couple that with their midfield, I think that it's going to be a battle in there. Not to say that we couldn't get on top.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like our midfield is underrated now. When it was operating at 100%, we had absolute match winners. I mean, if Boak's playing at all Australian levels, if Robbie Gray's playing at 2014 finals levels, kicking goals, moving in between midfield, if Wingard swings through and starts creating some problems, Brad Ebert's playing in good form, you've got Ollie Wines in and under, I feel like our midfield performing at their absolute capacity is capable of winning in games of footy, and I feel like we are in it with we do have a chance with our midfield talent. It's just a matter of converting our opportunities and not turning the ball over and contested footy, and that's where it's going to be won, on a small ground at the SCG. I just feel like this is the week we can win if we're going to beat Sydney and turn around that record.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Sydney is, like, you reel off those names for us and they're all, like you'd almost say that almost any midfield in the competition is capable of turning it on, like, week to week. And as we said before, like, they've lost Tom Mitchell. So that's kind of like they had a bit of a, like, you know, four-headed monster going through with him, Kennedy, Hanbury and Parker. But, I mean, reel off the stats, like, Josh Kennedy was last year first in contested possessions, second in clearances, third in disposals. You had Hanbury fifth. Parker rates highly in clearances, contested possessions as well. Like, so Ollie Wines and Robbie Gray were around the mark in those categories as well. I mean, Sydney's almost the best of the best in this regard. I think we bat a bit deeper, in actual fact. I think based on Sydney having shed a couple of, guys who had, you know, performed for them previously, and maybe they'd replace him with unknowns. I think we've got probably seven or eight guys who go through there. And we've got, you know, Ollie Wines entering his fifth year. He should now be able to go head-to-head with Josh Kennedy and really hold his own and look to win that matchup. And obviously Sam Powell-Pepper can help out in that regard as well. So we've, at the very least, we've got the weaponry should we find some advantages to do some damage. The one thing is, so, like, obviously there's stoppage, but there's also general play and, like, the movement of the ball around the ground. You can have a guy burst from a pack, but on the whole, like, your ball movement around the ground is really kind of, I guess, what determines the game, I guess.
And it's all about our attitude in the first quarter. We just can't dig ourselves in a hole and then just tread water. I mean, it's all about coming to play, being ready to go, converting opportunities when we get them, and not turning the ball over, because once we turn the ball over, that's when our head drops. It's a matter of getting on top early and then keeping that momentum going. Soon as we start getting scored on heavily, it's game over. I mean, you know, the Swans are 4-2 to 1-3 in the first quarter, and it's really going to be hard to come back from that. So it's really important we get a good first quarter, and that means the midfield getting their hands on the ball first.
And one thing we know about from Sydney is that it's going to be tightly contested and highly pressured in the midfield. And in those early starts, like, this is a highly professional team who, I mean, you can catch them on the hop. I mean, was it last year or the year before where they got belted by GWS in round one? So, I mean, they're not invincible. Like, teams lose games, and they're down on a few key names, a Papley up forward, Jared McVay, etc. So you're right. If we assert ourselves and are able to, you know, wrestle control early, I mean, that's always a good thing. Because I think the kind of typical Port Adelaide performance for the last couple of years is where we do give up that 4 or 5 goal lead and kind of wrestle ourselves back into the game, but ultimately fall short. So we can't afford to do that this week. All right. Well, I mean, one of the things, I mean, I guess I've identified about the Sydney lineup is that despite their few injuries, they're to kind of the complementary mid or small, medium-sized players, and their key position players, at least to my eyes, seem to be well in place. So as far as the forward and defensive matchups go, Sydney seem to be pretty much at full strength. Correct me if I'm wrong, but so Andrew, you've checked out the forward and defensive matchups. So where would you like to start with that one?
I'd like to start off by saying that overall, it's a very similar position both defences find themselves in, in being a little bit undersized against their forward matchups. So Port will obviously have Dixon and Trengove, and probably Eddie playing in the forward lines, whilst we've listed Westhoff at centre forward. He's very much played on the wing during pre-season, so I'm not expecting him to play a lot of time in the forward lines running up. I expect him to spend a lot of time running back. So Grundy and Laidler are their two real sort of, I guess, toll options. They've got them listed at fullback and centre halfback. And Grundy's 192 centimetres, Laidler 190 centimetres, compared to Dixon at 200 and Trengove at 197. So there's a definite height advantage there. Eddie's at 193. He might get a Dane Rampy. He's probably the next cab off the rank, and that would shuffle someone like Nick Smith down to a wing guard. So there's a bit of a height advantage there. I mean, we haven't particularly used that well in the past, and so it'll really come down to our ball use going inside 50 and not getting obsessed with that long ball into Charlie and more trying to find that lead. And I think there's been a lot of and particularly the Aaron Greaves video just after selection today spoke a lot about their ball movement and trying to really target players inside 50. So there's some positive murmurings there, and they've spoken a lot about their method during the preseason. So I think we saw a little bit of that against Hawthorn, and that'll be really critical against Sydney, because Sydney's team defense is so phenomenal. So yeah, there's a bit of height, but equally, I mean, we go the same in Sydney's forward line. Franklin 199, Tippett at 202, and Reid at 196, and we've got Cleary, Homsch, and Jonas, who are all in that 190 to 193 range. So similar problem for us. The matchups will be interesting. I don't think Homsch should take. I mean, I started saying Franklin or Tippett. It'll be interesting to see where that lands. But I think Cleary will go to Franklin. I hope Jonas goes to Tippett and uses his body against him, and Homsch to go to Reid, so he's got a little bit more flexibility to potentially move off. Dean Towd, another interesting one, because he's that 188 sort of mid-size forward, and he would be a traditional sort of Jasper Pittard matchup, I reckon. So it'll be interesting to see whether Broadbent or Houston cops his role. I mean, in the small forward on either end, I think we've got the an advantage in Wingard. Wingard, Gray, and Young will all move around. Interestingly, Young, he said that he's playing a bit further up the field this year. We saw that against Hawthorn. The other one is Sam Gray. So Greaves went into some detail that they're actually, and this scared me a little bit, they're looking to play him deeper forward this year and be a bit of a forward line pressure man, which will be interesting because he wasn't particularly good at that when he first came into the side, but he's been pretty good in preseason. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all of that plays itself out.
Well, where do I start? Forward line, I'm feeling confident rotating Jackson and Paddy Ryder, those two in particular. How often do we see big fours take contested marks? It's not a very common occurrence, so I feel like those two boys in particular have an advantage when the ball hits the ground on their opponents. So what we've got in effect is a rotating ruck that is able to hit a contest when the ball hits the ground. So obviously we've seen what Trengrove can do in the ruck. He hits the contest, he gets the ball moving forward. It's similar what Paddy does as well, and similar what Paddy does in the forward line. When he's hitting the contest, he's picking up his own crumb, turning over his shoulder and snapping. It's an advantage, I feel, not necessarily in the air, but on the ground. We've got Dixon who can hit the contest on the ground, and Eddie's been able to kick goals as well. So we can talk about how the heights and, the height differential and whatnot, but I feel like our talls in particular have an advantage when the ball hits the ground. And similar with our tall defenders, yes, they're going to be out marked if the taller players for Sydney get off the leash, but I feel like our tall defenders are just as capable of cleaning up the mess when the ball hits the ground. So modern footy's, you know, you talk about key positions, and Western Bulldogs won a grand final with an undersized ruckman and one key forward. So it's all about when the ball hits the ground, and I feel like our forwards and our backs are pretty clean in that regard, and that's what really stood out against Hawthorn. Our defence in particular, they were really sorted out, and they really got the ball moving our way and cleanly exited that back 50, and our forwards were able to push up with having our with Dixon and whatnot, and then having Eddie as our stay home forward, and really were stopping the Hawks from getting that re-entry. So those forwards working up the ground, getting a contest and moving the ball forward, I feel like, you know, we've got enough players to get the ball and keep it down our end. But the ruck situation for me is that rotating combination of Trengrove and Ryder really excites me, because, you know, Trengrove proved himself as a ruckman. If he can just bring a contest to the 450, I don't expect him to take contested marks. At the end of the day, that's the cherry on top. But if he adds a contest in the 450, it's going to be an advantage. And we know what Paddy can do when the ball hits the ground. So that's my take. But look, the Sydney defence, without Alira, they're missing that chop out and that cut off. So I don't know how they're going to replace that sort of output.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm not sure what's going on with Alira. He was pretty impressive last year and really fit well into it, and gave like probably a third tool to what's, I mean, it's a supreme Sydney defence, really. They have really been somewhat unheralded. I mean, you've got Nick Smith has been an All-Australian, I think. Dan Rampey certainly was last year, and Heath Grundy has been around for a long time and just continually gets a job. But, I mean, it seems, and this is something Sydney's been doing for a while, but you touched on Western Bulldogs there. It seems to be somewhat in vogue in AFL circles at the moment to have a somewhat undersized defence. And you might concede a bit of height, but it's the mobility, the kicking skills and so forth that you gain as a result. And, I mean, we have that to some degree, but we have probably comparatively it's unproven couple of guys, and maybe like a Cleary or Houston, a couple of guys who could get exposed. I just kind of have nightmares about a few. You know, one of the things that's happened to Port quite a bit over the years is where we have that pack situation. We just have like one of our tall defenders get caught behind a block and someone just cleanly takes a mark. I think that we would be more susceptible to like those kind of those errors in those kind of pack situations than Sydney would. I mean, as I said before, like reeling off those names, like Rampey and Smith are probably the two premier medium small defenders going around at the moment, and Heath Grundy and Jeremy Laidlaw just keep getting their job done. So, I mean, as we said before, a lot of it comes down to will come down to the midfield. I just I look at Sydney's defence and think about how they execute as a team. They kind of remind me of the Spurs in a bit, like the San Antonio Spurs, that is. And they just bring players in who immediately integrate into their system, and regardless of the name on paper and how many games they played, they are able to execute. And that really should be the ideal that we're trying to get to. So, you know, Dan Houston, Tom Cleary and others, that's on you this week.
And the forgotten man, Logan Austin. I feel like we have brought in young players. Tom Cleary plays the Carlisle role, and then Austin can play like the Trengrove role, and then you've got Homps playing small, tall and Jonas as well. But, yeah, you're right.
The difference between those names, as much as we rate some of those players highly, they haven't proven themselves to the AFL world or in big finals or made grand finals.
Absolutely.
And that's the real difference is these guys have been, the Sydney guys have been through the ringer and have done it that many times against big blokes, little blokes, whoever it is, ground balls, players like Ryder and Trengrove. They deserve our respect, and I take your point around how good Ryder and Trengrove are when the ball does hit the ground. but they will be not playing against 195, 197 key backs. They'll be playing against some smaller guys and against a team that gets numbers to the fall of the ball. So I would hope that we're able to spread Sydney as best as possible and get away from these pack situations and try and beat them in the air.
So just touching on this, we're probably in agreement that for each team, the defensive matchup seems to be undersized against some taller, well-heralded players. So just looking from our perspective, like if you're in the Port Adelaide, you're the Port Adelaide defensive line coach, you're looking at the tools that Sydney have to offer. I know you mentioned before, Andrew, who you think you'd match up on Buddy. But I mean, firstly, who do we want to shut down first and who do we center them? So Jimmy, who are you shutting down first and who are you sending to them?
Well, obviously, Buddy is the main focal point. He's not the best contested mark, but he's a beast when the ball hits the ground. And when he does get it around the 50 arc, it's almost game over. So we've got to really pressure their midfielders to stop him getting that lace out. My direct matchup for Franklin would be Tom Cleary. And then it's a matter of a team defense type of setup. And that would require a cutoff. And that would be Jack Homps. So we've just got to rough him up. We've got to make him hurt and then limit his supply, which is all about the midfield. And then from there, just hope he misses his shots on goal. So my direct matchup would be a Tom Cleary because I feel like he's got the pace and the engine. And then it's a matter of team defence to stop the rest of the supply and when the ball hits the ground.
Yep, I mean, and that's what I'm probably thinking as well. I think you mentioned that before as well, Andrew. So it'll be interesting to see if Ken Hinckley and others think the same way heading into the game. One of the things, I guess, with Tom Cleary is that he's got that potential to hurt him going the other way. So hopefully we see a bit of that from Clouser just on the right and the left. He's got those good kicking skills.
Mm. Look, I'll just point a question. It's been mentioned during the week that our small forwards potentially could be one of the best group going around. I mean, Impey's out this week and Crack has been touted as a small forward. Do you feel like that with Gray, perhaps, that Sam Gray and Robbie Gray coming through, that could be an advantage for us?
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly one thing that that Aaron Young again mentioned in his interview to camera today is that they're looking for a really big spread of goals and goal kickers. And so you would imagine that would be from a spread of smalls and from midfielders. I think that's what made us damaging in the 13 and 14 years is having a real range of goal kickers and not relying on one key target. So we always had Chelsea 1 week or Wingard or Gray. Yeah, Gus. So I think we're trying to get back to that style. But I think the critical thing for those guys and the big guys is making the exit for the other team as difficult as possible. It's one thing that we've really struggled with over the last couple of years is a defensive mindset from the front of the ground. And then our midfield hasn't done enough to stop the ball in transit and we've been cut open way too many times. So I think if we can not just focus on the goal kicking, but focus on getting the ball in our forward half for as long as possible, it gives us some opportunities and gives those really talented players the biggest chance to dine out.
I think a good team really is probably looking at wanting to have four guys who kick at least 30 goals, hopefully more. And that's probably what we had in those successful years. So, I mean, the group of four that I would be looking at would be Charlie Dixon, Brett Eddy, Chad Wingard and Aaron Young. And you've got a couple of other guys who could potentially contribute in that area. Like we mentioned Impey before. Obviously, Westhoff is normally good for around 20 a year. And, you know, who knows what happens with Angus Mumfries. Jacko and Sam Gray might pop up for a couple here and there as well. One of the things is you kick the goals, and but that means you don't get a rebound from defence. So I guess it brings the ball back to centre. But you're six points to the good. So finishing would be nice, wouldn't it? Charlie Dixon and Even Brett Eddy in the first couple of weeks of the preseason were a bit wayward. So just being a bit more what's the word I'm looking for here? Accurate, yeah, around goals would be nice. Chad Wingard probably needs to have a bit of a bounce back. Yeah, he kind of goes 1 year on off as far as like being an All-Australian gun. He's always good, but yeah.
Look, yeah, we need our midfielders kicking goals, and look, if we could get, say, an 80% of Schultz's output from an Eddie and Dixon kicking, say, 40, we'll be laughing. But in our finals in 2014, we had Ebert kicking goals, Robbie Gray swinging through there, kicking goal, Boak, good, and, you know, Wingard. So, you know, those smaller type of players, and that's what the Western Bulldogs relied on, and they were having to move through midfielders that forward line because they just didn't have anyone else, but they ended up producing for them. So the midfield goals are really important as well.
Jared Pollock's probably one person he'd look to provide in that area, certainly as he did in 2014. He's had a year back now from what was, by all reports, a career-threatening injury with his navicular bone, and really seemed to be running back at kind of like full power in some of those preseason games. So looking for a big year, and obviously his partner in crime, Matty White, might come into the side at some point and offer a bit of that. But he, as we've said throughout this podcast, there's a few emerging names who he even needs to obviously put some form on the board for maybe the Maggies, and you know, if he wants to fight, work his way back into the side. Right, guys. Well, I think we might sum up here. Now, as per usual, if you're new to the Port Adelaide Game Day podcast, what we do here is a segment called Six Pointers, where it's six questions that I provide to the guys, just as far as our predictions for the game. And what we're going to do this evening, actually, is it's our first podcast for the year, is do six pointers for the game this week and a season six pointers with some of our predictions that we can keep an eye on throughout the season. And I suppose if you're a fan of the show Whose Line Is It Anyway, you'll know that the points don't matter, and it doesn't matter who wins, but it's just a bit of a stab in the dark. So six pointers this week, guys. Who are we taking for leading goal kicker? We'll alternate who gets to go first. So, Jimmy, if you want to kick off with your leading goal kicker.
For the season or the game?
Just for the game against the Sydney Swans to start off with.
For Port Adelaide or both teams?
Port Adelaide?
Yep. Brett Eddy, three goals.
I am going to go with Chad Wingard.
Okay. So who are you taking, Andrew, as leading disposal winner for the Power?
Robbie Gray.
Travis Boak in his 200th.
Yes, indeed. So we normally do an over-under. I don't know what the stats... if the stats get kept on this, what it constitutes, but let's go over under. Sam Power Pepper 3.5 successful don't argues. I'll be the judge of this. So Jimmy, is he gonna get four and hit the over, or will he fall short?
I think he'll hit the over. It's almost his go to move. It's his first thought. It's his first action. Is just to push off. So yeah, I'm going over.
Yeah, I have to take the under for the competition, but I tend to agree with James that he doesn't mind leading with that.
And I suppose, I mean, I probably should have said this beforehand, but obviously a successful don't argue means that he breaks away from the player and he doesn't get pinged holding the ball or high fend off. But you know, there's points for style. So we're at the SCG on a Saturday twilight, which is obviously the marquee time slot in the AFL calendar or something. Andrew, you can kick this one off. What do you think the crowd will be for round one for the Swannies?
Hmm. 22,500.
Does anyone even know what the capacity of the SCG is? Jimmy?
38. No, my prediction's 28, but
okay.
They hold a test match every year, which I'm sure would sell 40 late 30s, early 40s.
Fair enough. And finally, guys, this is a two-header. Give us your margin and tip for Port v Sydney this Saturday. Jimmy, kick this one off.
Oh, mate, I've been positive all podcast, and I hate tipping against Port, so I'm going to say Port by 7 points.
Andrew?
Sydney by 27 points.
Okay. And I'm kind of splitting the difference, I guess. I'm going to take Sydney by 5 points. It's a bit hesitant. I think that we will come to play. I'm happy to take one for the team and put the reverse Moz on, and I'll take all credit. No, wait, I can't talk about that to make it a reverse Moz. Okay. So, gentlemen, that's our prediction for the game. Now, let's look a bit further ahead. I mean, we're all excited about this season, and I guess we've touched on a few things throughout this podcast, but give us some thoughts about the season ahead. 2017 for Port Adelaide, the fifth year of the Ken Hinckley era, and it will be a historical year. We've got the China game coming up. So our season six-pointers. Andrew, if you'd like to kick this one off by giving me your leading goal kicker for the season.
I am going to go with... Charlie Dixon.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And a number? Chad Wingard.
Yeah. Sorry to butt in there, Andrew. Did you have anything to add about Charlie Dixon? He's going to hit his straps?
I think so, yeah. I think he might start just a little bit slowly and then fly home.
Fair enough. And I need something to do. I'm going to chip in here. I am predicting Aaron Young. I reckon he might kick about 45. Also, hopefully we have a few guys around that mark. As I said before, spread the load a bit. I think this is a best and fairest category, so we should be able to track this one. Most improved on the season, Jimmy, who are you going to
predict
for that one? Have a think about it.
Most improved, Tom Cleary.
I am going to go with Dan Houston.
Okay. Yeah, I obviously, as I wrote the questions, I've been able to think about this already. So, I'm lining up Tom Cleary as well. He seems primed for, probably a full season and... He's bided his time to have a crack at it. So, I mean, any those two guys that we've both mentioned there, if they have good seasons, that would be most welcome. And obviously the major category at the best and fairest, the John Cale Medal. Who are we predicting for the John Cale Medal, Port Adelaide Best and Fairest 2017? Andrew, who do you think?
I am going to go with Ollie Wines.
I really hope this comes true. I'm going to pick Brad Ebert.
Okay, yeah, he it's kind of guy who, if we think back, was it the 2012 one he really deserves? So it'd be nice if he cracked through. I've also gone with Ollie Wines. As I said before, it's his fifth year. He really got close last year, so I think he'll give it a decent shot this year. And over under. In the vein of goal kicking, this relates to Brett Eddy, who has come into the side this week, and I guess I've been toing and froing over where to set the line at. Why don't we go with Brett Eddy 30 and a half goals over under?
Yeah, definitely over for me.
I'm gonna take the under. And I reckon the under is in play. I think we've all been pretty excited by that Hawthorn game, but there's to come in and kick over 30 goals in your first AFL season would be going pretty well. So just a nudge under.
Yeah, well, I've got him in a fantasy competition where he gets scores based on his goals. So I am certainly hoping he smashes the over and edges towards 40, that would be lovely.
Fitness aside, he's likely to play every game.
He has to go at about
goal and a half a game.
Goal and a half to get there. So you'd hope he'd get around the mark. So what do we think, guys? Is that a decent line to set it at?
Yeah, 30 goals. I'll take 30 goals any day of the week.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, it's time to get down to business, guys. This is playing for keeps here. What do we think our final win, loss, and ladder position will be? Jimmy, I think it's your turn.
I think we'll win 13 games, 9 losses. Is that right? No.
Yep.
Yeah, for 7th.
God, you're in my brain. that's it's hard to argue with anything else. If I'm going to be different, I'm going to go down and I'd go 12 and 10.
That would be all right. That's still 8th.
Pushes here potentially into 8th. But it's going to be interesting to see how the season plays out, because I think everyone's talking about how even it's going to be, which means that, those 6th to 10th places, I think, are going to be pretty hot work.
Kind of alluded to it at the start of the podcast. I feel that we might have a bit of a 2013 on our hands here, where we've got a few new faces who really bring something to the team, and we might surprise a few teams and really maybe fly out of the blocks. But there'll probably be some down moments as well, and I guess relative to expectations, I could live with that. What I have gone with, and I didn't put any mathematical thought into this, so I've said 12 and 10 for 7th. What you guys are saying, you probably need more than 12 wins to get that spot. So, look, I'll sit with 12 and 10 and 7th, we'll see what happens there. So, I think we're probably all. I mean, between the three of us, we probably all see us. That's probably like the median, I guess, of where we'd see each of us would see our finishing position. I guess, I mean, we'd all be hoping for top four. But we probably realise as well that it's a tough competition, and we've got a wide kind of variance with what could happen this year, don't we?
I really feel like the top eight from 2016 is really gonna move around this year. I feel like a lot of the predictions that the general football public are making are safe types of predictions, and I really feel like there's going to be some big movers and whatnot, and some of those predictions, like Melbourne St Kilda, for instance, I don't think one of those teams will live up to the hype, and I feel like a Geelong or Adelaide will slide, you know, so there's a few thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly haven't seen enough footy, to be honest, to make any kind of informed call. Where I'm at with watching footy at this point in time is just kind of enjoying the ride a bit and hoping we win, and kind of not kicking the cat if we lose. It's enjoying it, and obviously you hope you win every game, and obviously I'd love us to just absolutely fly through the season and make a dent in the finals. So, I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. But
it all starts now. This is it. Let's get off to a good start.
Let's hope. Well, folks, I reckon that this is just kind of all dwindling a bit, so we might bring it to an end this evening. So that is all for the first Game Day podcast episode of the 2017 season. As always, keep an eye out for all the shows on Port Fan Radio. There's plenty getting around. There's a lot of coverage of previews, reviews, and, you know, all sorts of things, Eastern mysticism and so forth. So get around it. Give us a review on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. What that means is that we will shoot up the charts. More people find out about Port Fan Radio, and don't have to listen to 5AA. So tell your family, tell your mum, tell your dad, because if you want to talk about Port and the actual game rather than just the bulldust that comes with it, Port Fan Radio have got you covered. So Jimmy, Andrew,
see you at the Game Day Village.
Absolutely. Is that still a thing?
There'll be something, whether it's there or whatnot.
All right. If they build it, we will come. Well, thanks, guys, and to all folks who will be enjoying the game on the weekend. Enjoy the game. Cheers. Go to Power.
Come Port.
Go Port Power.
Go Panthers.
Up the ports.
Yeah, I know that people are like that.
Now, Pepper.